And I wish that David would have recorded all of that. But it didn't happen, and it's okay. All right, I'm going to share my screen with you. Everyone can see this. Awesome. And now I have to make you all big again because now you're small. There. All right. So I'm teaching from a second screen. So I'll be looking over here for most of what we're doing tonight. All right. Welcome to Wake Up. Welcome to Feel Without Fear. I'm so grateful you're here. I'll tell you a little bit more about myself every time we have a workshop. So for tonight, you can just know that I've been married to that very handsome gentleman in the chat for almost 22 years. And we have two dogs named Lachlan and Willow, and two kids named Ryan and Addie. Actually, her name is Adeline, but she goes by Addie. If you're into human design, I'm a 1-3 emotional projector. If you're into astrology and you're curious about that, I'm a Gemini sun, a Sagittarius moon, and a Pisces rising. If you're into Myers-Briggs personality types, I'm an ENTJ, which is also called the commander, which basically means I make a great boss and a terrible employee. So it's a good thing I'm my own boss. My favorite foods are Tex-Mex, dark chocolate, homemade pasta, and ginger lemon tea. Although tonight I'm drinking an orange ginger mint tea, but still ginger. I'm super into ginger. And my favorite colors are deep shades of blue. So sapphire, cerulean, royal blue, navy blue. I just love all deep shades of blue. Just so you know, in case you didn't, I'm not a licensed therapist, counselor, or healthcare provider. And so this presentation is just for information and for education. And I'm not here to diagnose or treat any physical or mental health condition. And I would ask you to not use this program as a substitute for appropriate physical and mental health care. And also, this presentation is my own original stuff. And where I have pulled from other sources, I have quoted those and cited those so that you can go and learn more if you'd like. But otherwise, everything is mine. And so I would just appreciate you if you are a practitioner. I'm not teaching you this so that you can go teach this to your clients, although I definitely know that it will apply to your clients. And I just ask that if you repost or share anything that I do, that you just give me credit. That's all. So this is the first workshop in Feel Without Fear, and we will have a group coaching call next Tuesday, April 23rd at 10 a.m. So if you have not yet marked your calendar with that, please do so, because the group coaching calls are just as valuable as what we're doing here tonight. And our next workshop is on May 8th, and it is called Untriggered. We will also have a group coaching call following that workshop on Tuesday, May 14th at 10 a.m. And Untriggered is about facing and overcoming triggers with awareness, rewiring your brain and nervous system, and reprogramming your subconscious. So mark your calendars, please. So this series, this program is the answer to the most common question I receive, which is, how did you get to here where you are, and what was that process like? So Feel Without Fear is really my own healing journey in coaching form. So it's very personal to me. There's a lot of my own story woven through it. And that's actually something that a lot of people who've gone through it have told me was like their favorite thing. Because it is applicable to your real life. It is applicable to wherever you are in your life. And you don't need to be qualified or have done certain things or whatever to be able to put this into practice in your life. So my journey, my awakening starts with awareness. My work starts with awareness. So this is my best representation visually for the way that awareness works. And it's kind of like concentric circles. So there you are in the middle. Hopefully you have a balloon. hopefully. And all of these circles are the circles of influence, the circles that form, what you think about things and what your beliefs are and the patterns in your life. You're influenced by, first your parents, and the people that live immediately in your home, like your siblings and your partner eventually, then you're influenced by your friends, you're influenced by your community at large, you're influenced by your DNA and by the patterns of your ancestors, by the government, and by the world, right? All of these things come in and they form a belief system, or what we believe is a personality, or who we are in the world and what our identity is. And so awareness is like concentric circles, and it's always expanding and building on itself. And as soon as you become aware of one thing, you are aware that you are aware. And now you're now at a different level. It's almost like you've jumped a timeline. You're always watching whatever's happening whenever you're aware. Whatever you're feeling, whatever you're noticing, whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're thinking in that moment. So when we're talking about awareness of the body, it means noticing feelings and sensations. These are things that we've always had. No human being has a life without feelings and sensations, and you don't out-heal your feelings. Our feelings and our sensations are inherent. They are part of us. They are how we experience the world, but they are not inherently bad or wrong, even the ones that we would label as bad, symptoms that we would label as bad, or emotions that we would label as bad. But due to the influence of our environment, right? Think about those concentric circles collectively, through parenting, through entertainment, books, other conditioning, institutionalized education, religion, if you were in that. We are conditioned to judge and pathologize feelings and sensations. Institutionalized healthcare, modern healthcare. So conditioning, right? The programming that you don't even know is happening. It's the water you're swimming in until you wake up and you go, oh shit, look at this water I've been swimming in. It's really fucked up, right? That's what it means to wake up. And then you begin to see what your part is in that water. And like, do I have a choice to get out of this water? Or how do I be my authentic self while I'm in this weird water that I'm in? And what is my responsibility in this water? And what am I called to do? What is my purpose while I'm in this? Because the answer is you can't get out of the water, but you can be aware of everything that's in it and of how that's influencing you. So conditioning is part, it's the water. Conditioning that pathologizes sensation creates a disembodied, disconnected, diseased society. And I don't just mean sick society. I mean like a society without ease. So some examples of conditioning from environment. So these would be things like your family of origin, society at large, culture, social media, news media, are things like boys don't cry. A lot of men carry that story. And so a lot of men don't allow themselves to cry because there's a story of I'm not supposed to cry because I'm a man and that's not a manly thing to do, right? A lot of people, I mean, women hold that belief too, but we as women carry conditioning that says that we're bitchy or hormonal or PMS-y just because we have these normal physiological ebbs and flows of our cycles. And so we learn to pathologize our cycle. And if we're particularly moody or particularly crampy or tired, then it means there's something wrong with us, instead of us going, wait a second, why is there something wrong with this natural thing my body does? There's nothing wrong with it. It's just I was conditioned to think that. When we feel slow and sad during the winter, right? It's diagnosed as seasonal affective disorder. So in a time when nothing grows, when literally nothing grows, if you're not still growing, that's a diagnosable medical condition. That is bonkers, absolutely bonkers. We've all been conditioned around our periods, or at least I was. I heard horror stories about my mom's periods. And so the conditioning for me was that your period is gross, smelly, disgusting. You don't talk about it, especially with men around. We're conditioned that if we need extra time to rest and recover after birth, that's a diagnosable medical condition called postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. Because you need extra rest because you've just literally opened a portal in your body and brought a soul from the soul realm into the physical, and you need extra fucking rest, that there's something wrong with you. That is conditioning. It's bullshit. Conditioning is also feeling like a boy or feeling like a girl or not conforming to gender norms as a disorder that is diagnosed and potentially surgically or hormonally altered. Like, that's conditioning. Anything around identity is conditioning. These are just examples. I could keep going, but we don't have time for that. So what does this have to do with our awareness? Back to our concentric circles. So you could think of this as like you in your physical body. This is your avatar, the meat suit, the physical experience that you're having. And then this is like the best graphic that I could find to represent the part of you who can watch all of it. Okay. So you are more energy than you are matter. Your body has more space than it has solid materials. Even though it seems solid and dense, there's actually more space in between the atoms of your body than there is matter. You are not your body, but you have a body. This part of you does not identify with your body. It doesn't identify with your sensations or the thoughts that you have in your head. So you have a body, but you're not a body. You have a mind, but you are not your mind. And you have sensations, but you are not your sensations. You are capable of observing all of it, right? If you are like present and not rushing through life and, you know, dissociating and like scrolling all the time. I'm like freezing. I'm going to turn my little space heater on really fast. Just one second. Okay. So I personally refer to this part of myself that can watch all of these things and can watch what I feel and can watch my reactions and how I communicate and when I get triggered and all of that. I refer to that as my consciousness or my soul or my spirit. I don't remember where I heard this from, but it's such a beautiful analogy that if you think of God or source or consciousness as an ocean, your soul or your personal spirit is a drop of water of that ocean, but it's still part of the whole, right? It's just a drop of it. So if the word spiritual brings up discomfort, I totally get it. I'm a former evangelical Christian, former pastor's wife, grew up in purity culture in the 80s and 90s, signed my true love weights card when I was 12 years old, was a virgin when I got married, like all the things. So I come from a lot of religious conditioning. So if the word spiritual brings up some discomfort for you, like I see you and it's okay. Just take a moment and notice if there's discomfort there, right? Just acknowledge that it's there. Just watch it. Is anyone here uncomfortable with spirituality or terms around spirituality? Okay. So you don't have to call this part of you what I call this part. You can call this part your higher self, your true self, your authentic self, the observer, the watcher, whatever resonates and feels right for you. The important thing is that you understand that you are a spiritual being. You are just as much a spiritual being as you are an earth being. Spiritual does not equal religious. It doesn't equal Christian or believer or anything having to do with any religion or anything like that. It's just simply, I have this like part of me that's a drop of the ethereal ocean. And it is the part of me that can watch everything that I do, think, feel, say, every relationship I have, every trigger I have. So my consciousness, my soul or my spirit is the watcher of the being who identifies as me. My consciousness, soul, true self is not identified with my body or anything about my body. It doesn't identify with my gender, my race, my sexuality, my level of ability, my age, my weight, nothing. It does not identify. It does not have attachment to those things. Ego is what has attachment to those things. If you notice resistance to what I'm saying right now, just be with it. You can place a hand on the part of you where you might feel that resistance. Maybe it feels like a little in your throat or like a in your tummy. Just notice. Offer it breath. Be present. And also notice if there's a voice in your head that tells a story about the resistance that you may feel. Or maybe if you don't feel resistance about this in particular, you could think back to earlier today when you had some resistance, where there was maybe some judgment or like a little contraction in your body, right? We have those moments a lot throughout the day. So just notice. If you could notice that there's a voice in your head that says something about me, about this program, about yourself, if there's a voice that is offended or that doubts or maybe has fear, then you are in conscious awareness. If you can notice the voice in your head, you are in conscious awareness. That is what it means to wake up. You are waking up to that which is always there that most people are asleep to. The watcher and observer part of you was watching and observing the voice in your head, and any discomfort that you felt about me or what I was saying or about this course, or, you know, saying that your consciousness doesn't have race or gender or sexual orientation or age. If you were able to be present with a story in your head about that, that's like, but wait, but what do you mean? Like, then you were in conscious awareness. You didn't have to invoke God. You didn't have to pray. You didn't have to meditate. Nothing to do with any kind of religion. You were just simply present and aware. That's it. It's so simple. So whether you have a particular spiritual practice, or if you're part of a spiritual lineage of yoga or a priestess path or an herbalism path or anything like that, if you follow modern spiritual teachers or ancient spiritual teachers, if you attend church, whether you pray or you don't pray, if you believe in God or you don't believe in God, you have a part of you that is not your body, is not your mind, and it can observe and notice and ask questions about everything. Isn't that cool? It's freaking cool. That is your conscious awareness. And when you are curiously observing, when your mind is bouncing and rambling all over the place, you are in awareness. When you are feeling the sensations of your body and being present with them, not trying to fix them, not trying to make them go away, not trying to Google them to figure out what they mean, right? Not making a story about them, you're in awareness. When you're curious about whatever is happening, it's amazing whenever you can be present, so present in a conversation with someone that you are curious about, oh, isn't it interesting that when they said this thing, I felt this little bit of resistance in my body, but I kept talking without stopping to be like, hey, can we talk about that? Right? You can practice it in real time. It's pretty incredible. Awareness is like a muscle. And the more you use it, the stronger it gets. The more you stretch it, the stronger it gets. And at first, it may feel weird or uncomfortable or unfamiliar to pause and check in with your body and just notice what's there, because we're so used to rushing and going so fast through everything. It might be strange to be like, wait a minute, I'm watching myself. Doesn't that mean I'm dissociated? Does that mean there's like a part of me up here, like that's not in my body? Like, no, it doesn't mean any of that. But if you do deal with dissociation, I understand if you might have that fear, which is why I bring it up. So with commitment and practice, awareness gets easier and it even feels more natural all the time. And there is a possibility that exists for every single person to be in awareness more often than you are not. And that is just conscious living. So living in awareness gives us access to our power of choice. If we don't have access to our power of choice, we're blindly following the conditioning. We're swimming in the water, but we're not aware of how everything in the water is influencing us and how we may be reacting to it, or the stories that we have about it, or the triggers we have about it. If we're not in awareness and we don't have access to our choice or our power, we're kind of on autopilot. Awareness requires slowing down. And when we go more slowly, we can be more present because we have time to observe and notice, and we can even see solutions or possibilities where we couldn't see those things before. when you're rushing, and you're in that fight flight state, it's like, okay, I can do this or I can do this, right? You get in that binary, and it's very difficult to see other possibilities that might be easier or more creative or more beneficial for everyone involved. We are more open because we observe that our current perspective is just one of many perspectives. It makes you a more curious person in conversation, in communication, in relationship. So I'm going to use the phrases living in awareness and come into awareness a lot. So that's just my vocabulary that I use. And it's because awareness is a state of being. It doesn't require doing or action. It's simply observational and curious. It is a state that we can enter into and exit out of, and it is completely normal for everyone to be in and out of conscious awareness all day, every day. When we live in awareness, this state of presence becomes a state of being. State of being doesn't mean you're sitting there doing nothing. It means that whatever you're doing, you are present with it. You are being it as if it is the only thing that exists, because it actually is the only thing that exists. In this state of presence, there is more space, there's more possibility, there's more peace, and you're going to have more access to your intuition. So if anyone is familiar, love the book Existential Kink by Carolyn Elliott. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend. David can drop a link for it in the chat for you. She says, we could venture to guess that the vast self, so that's what she's referring to as the soul, spirit, true self, is unconscious in most modern human beings because we all seem to have a strong interest in experiencing ourselves as separate, alienated egos, little isolated particles who exist at the mercy of cruel fate and outside circumstance. Think about it. If the self contains everything, then the way to experience yourself as a separate identity, as separate, is to identify yourself with only one side of a polarity, and to disdain the other side, to pretend it's so not you, right? We love to do that. We look at something, we feel repulsed by it. Oh, that's not me, right? I would never do that. Oh. That's how you separate yourself. You other yourself. Carolyn goes on to say, the self with a capital S is the primal selfhood of everything and everyone, which is paradoxically also our own inner selfhood. This is so because self is infinite consciousness. It's as if all of us humans are light bulbs, and the self is the electricity that powers us. In becoming more identified with this underlying whole that we share with everyone, we paradoxically become more uniquely individual, because we become free of our attachment to conventional, socially prescribed roles. That's what authenticity is. Authenticity is the highest state, the highest frequency that a person can be in. It's even higher than the frequency of love. So here are some things that you need to know about your infinite self, consciousness, soul, higher self, spirit, whatever you want to call that part of you. It does not have a race, an age, a gender, a weight, a sexual orientation, an ability level. It doesn't identify as neurodivergent or autistic or anything like that. It is totally neutral and non-judgmental and curious. It is all things. It is light. It is darkness. It is good. It is bad. It is all things. And it desires to experience the full spectrum of duality, which means the polar opposites, but everything in between, all the possibilities in between. And this is why the soul incarnates into human form. Your consciousness or your soul or your highest self is not the voice in your head that sounds like a bully that beats you up or shames you or tells you that you're lazy and fat. That is not the voice of your authentic self, nor are your emotions or the sensations of your body or your thoughts or your symptoms. None of those things is your highest self. Awareness also is not hypervigilant. So hypervigilance, the energy that I think of when I feel hypervigilant, which I feel quite a lot, is it's like a hawk energy, right? Where a hawk is like flying over and it's like keeping an eye, right? Like super sharp vision, like I gotta find it, right? I gotta find my prey. Like that's hypervigilant energy to me. Awareness energy is more like you're just floating in the ocean, like with your snorkel mask on, just enjoying the fish. Okay. It's just very laid back. It's not intense. It's not hyper focused. It's not in fear, right? It's not trying to catch something like a hawk is. So, more floating in the ocean, watching the fish in the coral reef, less hawk energy. Okay. Your awareness or your consciousness is not a perfectionist. So, if there's a part of you or a voice in your head that's like, oh, I have to get this right, I better get this right. Isn't that interesting? Right? Isn't it interesting that I'm trying to be perfect at this? Your awareness is not overanalyzing or intellectualizing because there's nothing to figure out. Ego wants something to figure out. Parts of you, fragmented parts of you, want something to figure out. Awareness is just like, oh, isn't that interesting? This is what's happening. And your awareness is not disappointed in you or in anyone else, or angry or full of grief or anything like that. Awareness is curious. Whatever it is simply something interesting to observe, whether that's fish in the ocean or the people you see fighting in the mall or your own conversations with the voices in your head or whatever it is that you're doing in the moment, making a cup of tea, writing an email, whatever. It's just curious. It likes to observe. Awareness is also neutral. And you can notice that you have a desire for a certain outcome without being identified with that outcome. Awareness is also present. It's not focused on the past or the future. It's just like, this is what's happening right now, right? Without labeling it as good or bad, this is just what's happening. Your awareness is directly tied to your power to consciously choose, as I mentioned before. It's also an agent for neuroplasticity. So, anyone here never heard of neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire itself in response to stress? Okay, so your brain is not a stagnant thing. In response to stress, neural pathways are formed in the brain and can create habitual reactions, which are triggers. And so, it's like that part fires before you even have a chance to be like, whoa, wait, I want to make a different decision. Like it fires before you have that opportunity. That can be changed and shifted in the brain. And it can be shifted with awareness. Like you don't need a brain retraining program or a device or, you know, whatever. You can literally just practice being present with what's happening and noticing that you have the power to choose something different. And when you choose something different, the brain doesn't get to go down the familiar pathway and a new pathway begins to form. And you can do this for free. Awareness is present with whatever's happening, with whatever you're feeling, with whatever the voice in your head is saying, and it is accepting of whatever is happening, knowing that if something was meant to be different, it would be different. So awareness doesn't judge things as like, oh, this shouldn't be happening, or this isn't what's supposed to happen to me. So I want to take a few moments now to just practice awareness. And even if you are already in the practice of awareness, it never hurts to practice more, right? So stop looking at your screen. If you want to close your eyes, if that helps, great. If you want to look off out the window into the distance, great. But just kind of give yourself a chance to just like shift your focus a little bit from being intense on the screen. And for me, it helps to close my eyes because it helps to shut out all the distractions. And just become aware of your breathing. Without changing how you're breathing, just be aware of the breath. If there's a part of you that's like, oh, my breathing is shallow, I need to make it deeper, notice. Without changing how you're breathing, just notice your breathing. Maybe you've been learning about breath work or the importance of deep, slow breathing, and you may have noticed that yours was not that and then changed it because you think, oh, I'm doing it wrong. Just notice. When you're in awareness, you're not seeking to change anything. You're just being present with what is. If you have a thought come into your head, it feels like a distraction, just notice, oh, isn't it interesting? Isn't that interesting that that thought came into my head right now when I don't want to think anything? So just notice the breath. Notice how it feels as it moves in and out of your body. Notice if you're breathing through your nose or your mouth. Notice if there's sound when you breathe. I was really stuffed up earlier today, so I was only breathing out of one nostril. Notice. Notice the sensation of the air on your skin as it flows in and out of your nostrils. Just everything that you can notice about the breath, notice. And as you notice the breath, I want you to also notice your right hand. Whatever your right hand is doing, just notice it. You don't have to move it or change it. Just whatever it's doing is fine. Now, is everyone able to be aware of your breath and your right hand at the same time? Are you able to do that? You can give me a thumbs up. You can shake your head. Okay, amazing. So stay present with the breath. Stay present with your right hand. Are you also noticing a voice in your head? Maybe your mind is thinking and thinking and talking incessantly inside your head. Be aware of that too. Be aware if there's a voice that's like, you're not doing this right. This is dumb. What a waste of time. Get to the point. Just notice whatever meaning the voice is making out of this exercise. Maybe your mind is quiet and curious. Maybe it's doubting or second guessing. Maybe it's making a grocery list. Just notice. While you're noticing your right hand and while you're noticing the breath. Are you able to notice all three at once? A little challenging for a few people. That's okay. That's okay. That's it. You've successfully practiced awareness. Ta-da! And with consistent practice, you can become aware of sensation in your body, the voice in your head, the trigger, the typical pattern, and more things that maybe you're not aware of yet. Okay? Awareness is the key that unlocks the door to whatever the truth is, whatever the pattern is, whatever wants to be healed, whatever needs to be released. Awareness is the key that unlocks the door. All right, we're going to shift our topic for just a second, and we're going to talk about complex PTSD. Anyone here never heard of complex PTSD, have no idea what that is or what I'm talking about? Y'all are all like, no, that's why I'm here. Get to it. Okay, let's talk about it. So complex PTSD, if you do not have this book already, please get it. It will be such a handy companion to this course. It will also tell you your entire life story, and you will be like, holy shit, how does he know everything that happens to me? And how does he know everything I think and feel? David will link it in the chat. It's really, really good. You can also get it on audiobook, but I like having it as a print version because I underline and mark all over this thing. And I like being able to refer back to it. I often will open it up in client calls and read a paragraph to a client and be like, this is what's happening. So I like having the print version. So complex PTSD usually, but not always, forms in childhood. It is the water we're swimming in our family of origin. We form complex PTSD because we did not have the ability to understand that our caregiver's inability to attune to our needs and co-regulate with us wasn't our fault. Like, no child is developmentally capable of knowing that. And in complex PTSD, we form these deep core beliefs that there's something wrong with me. It can also form alongside adverse childhood experiences, but not always. Adverse childhood experiences are things like if there was drug use or substance abuse in your home, if your parents were divorced, if you ever witnessed violence against a family member, if a family member was ever violent physically or sexually towards you, if you had a mentally ill parent, if you had a parent who attempted or committed suicide. Those are adverse childhood experiences. There's 10 of them. You can take a test to know your score. You know, from 1 or 0 to 10, David's ACEs score is 1 minus 6. So, and it shows up in how we are in the world. And like David's nervous system is on a bad day is more regulated than my nervous system on the best day. Cause I just am less fucking resilient. So anyway, with complex PTSD, there's a lot of hypervigilance about the environment or communication cues with other people. The nervous system is chronically dysregulated and easily triggered. And if we are in an immobilized or freeze or collapse state, we are more easily to fawn and people please and like try to make everyone else around us happy to avoid conflict. With complex PTSD, it's really, really common to kind of be in patterns of second guessing, doubting, or gaslighting yourself. It kind of seems nebulous, like you can't quite put your finger on what is wrong with you or like what feels off for you, but you're like, I know it's something, but all these other big diagnoses and things like don't fit. That's complex PTSD. And it's very, very common for people with complex PTSD to believe, oh, my childhood wasn't that bad. Anybody have that belief? Oh, it wasn't that bad. A few of you. Okay. Oh, but they had it worse than me. That's another one. They had it way worse than me, right? Okay, that's complex PTSD, babes. All right, so a quote from Pete Walker, the author of this book. Complex PTSD is a learned set of responses and a failure to complete numerous important developmental tasks. This means that it is environmentally, not genetically caused. CPTSD is neither inborn nor characterological. As such, it is learned. It is not inscribed in your DNA. It is a disorder caused by nurture, or rather lack of it, not nature. What is learned can be unlearned and vice versa. What was not provided by your parents can now be provided by yourself and others. So complex PTSD is a more severe form of PTSD. So PTSD is caused by one-time events, a bombing, a school shooting, an accident, a sudden death, a natural disaster, earthquake, tornado, something like that, being in a war. Complex PTSD is more severe, and it is delineated from PTSD by 5 things. So with complex PTSD, we have emotional flashbacks. Whereas with PTSD, they have flashbacks like in their minds and in their bodies of like, you know, they hear a very common one is hearing the sound of a firework, and it immediately transports a war veteran back to, you know, being in a bombing or getting shot at or something like that. Or hearing the sound of a really bad thunderstorm and getting really triggered because you think a tornado is coming. Those are like PTSD flashbacks. Complex PTSD has emotional flashbacks, and those can be a lot harder to identify because a lot of what we think is our personality is actually emotional flashbacks. And we'll talk about that more later because those are triggers. Complex PTSD is also delineated from PTSD by toxic shame. People with PTSD don't typically experience toxic shame, self-abandonment, a vicious inner critic, and social anxiety. Social anxiety includes things like people-pleasing, agoraphobia, things like that. So let's talk about emotional flashbacks or triggers. These are sudden, often prolonged regressions to overwhelming feeling states of being abused or abandoned. They include overwhelming fear, shame, alienation, rage, grief, depression. It unnecessarily triggers the fight-flight response. So the nervous system is perceiving something non-threatening as a threat, and it's triggering that fight-flight response unnecessarily. And triggers can range in intensity from really subtle to really horrific, and they can last a few moments, or they can last for weeks or even months. So some symptoms, air quotes, of complex PTSD are triggers, having a tyrannical inner critic, toxic shame, self-abandonment, social anxiety, feeling lonely or feeling abandoned or fearing that you're going to be abandoned, having a fragile self-esteem, ideating suicide, having an anxious, avoidant, or disorganized attachment style, developmental arrests around like communication, emotional intelligence, boundaries, things like that, having relationship difficulties. So you may experience relationship anxiety, relationship OCD, a lack of healthy communication in a relationship, lack of healthy rupture and repair, things like that. Mood swings, dissociating, an oversensitivity and intolerance to stress. So that's why people with complex PTSD are typically, they get more thrown out when they get stressed because they're less resilient due to the environment they were raised in. Complex PTSD is often misdiagnosed as ADHD, generalized anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, neurodivergence, gender dysphoria, panic disorder, borderline personality disorders, OCD, major depressive disorder, and autism. I don't know what happened, what the chicken or the egg is. I don't know if people become neurodivergent because of the way their brains develop in an environment of complex PTSD, or if they were already neurodivergent with autism or ADHD, and because of that, they formed complex PTSD due to the environment. I don't know which comes first. I don't think it matters, but I do think it matters that it's important that it's often misdiagnosed and mismedicated because you cannot medicate complex PTSD. Traumatologist John Breyer once said, if complex PTSD were ever given its due, the DSM used by all mental health professionals would shrink from its dictionary-like size to the size of a thin pamphlet. In other words, the role of traumatized childhoods in most adult psychological disorders is enormous. It is important not to get attached to labels and diagnoses such as complex PTSD. If you're learning about complex PTSD and you're like, yes, oh my gosh, that's me. That describes me to a T. Finally, I've got an answer. I can figure something out. I can know where to go for help. That's great. If it feels empowering to you, that's amazing. But notice if you get attached to it. Like if you start using things like my complex PTSD, where you have ownership over it, or if it becomes an excuse for why you can't do certain things or be expected to do certain things or take responsibility for yourself, or get past a trauma pattern in a relationship, things like that. As we heard from Pete Walker, it's not genetic, it's learned, and it can be unlearned. And we each have a sovereign responsibility to use our agency to become aware of these patterns, behaviors, triggers, and beliefs, and unlearn them to the best of our ability. And when I use the term CPTSD, it is not an attempt to identify with a diagnosis or to victimize anyone. It's just language that succinctly describes a collection of beliefs, nervous system states, emotional states, and behavioral patterns that stem from emotional abandonment and neglect. Yeah, sound good? I'll give you some personal relationships of how CPTSD shows up for me. Maybe these will mirror or resonate with you. So in close relationships, like with my husband, my very close friends, I'm extra sensitive to verbal and nonverbal communication cues. So verbal communication cues are things like tone of voice, inflection, volume, actual words. Nonverbal cues are things like facial expression, body language. And I often perceive some of these cues as threatening when they're not actually a threat because of being hypervigilant. The voice in my head, before I was conscious of this, would make up stories about me, about the other person, about our relationship, and catastrophize the worst because my deepest wound, and therefore my deepest fear, is abandonment and loss of intimate relationships. I'm more afraid of getting left than anything in my entire life. But it makes sense because my mother left me on the street when I was 3 years old and drove away because I threw a fit. So like that imprinted in my body, this deep survival fear of, oh my God, I have to like know everything that their face and their voice means. And I have to know what all their words mean, or I'm going to get left. Does that resonate with anybody? Okay. I see you. It sucks. When I am not conscious and aware of this pattern of perceiving a threat where the threat doesn't exist, I get defensive and angry. I pick fights. I'm just looking for confirmation that what I fear is happening so that I can do whatever it takes to protect myself from feeling abandonment. So I will often abandon myself to avoid getting abandoned. And because I am now more conscious and aware of this tendency and the old pattern of picking a fight or being defensive, and they don't give me the outcome I desire, I have learned to communicate to the other person. Because of awareness, I can notice in my body that feeling I get, and that's my cue to ask, hey, I noticed your facial expression or your tone or whatever. And the voice in my head is saying it means this. Is that what's happening right now? Am I interpreting this correctly? And do you know how many fights we have just completely avoided? Because I've learned to be aware of that sensation in my body that I associate with, oh, it's happening. I might get left. What if David's going to leave me because of this? What if my friend doesn't want to be my friend anymore? What if they want to break up with me? Like, I notice that feeling now because of the practice of awareness, and it happens really quickly. And if I'm not aware of it, I'll be like, why did you look at me like that? Or literally, this is a true story. One time David used a past tense verb instead of a present tense verb. And I was like, why did you use a past tense verb? Are you saying that this has been happening for like all this time and you're just now telling me? Like, that level of hypervigilance and defensiveness because I'm so afraid of getting abandoned. So it avoids and protects us from so much conflict just by being able to say, oh, there's that sensation. Hey, I noticed whenever you said this past tense verb, it kind of made me think in my head that this has been something that's been going on for a long time. Is that what you're saying? Is that what's happening for you? Do you see the difference in that energy? It's totally different. Awareness gives us the ability to communicate like that because we can slow down and notice and feel and be curious and go, oh, right, this thing is happening, but I'm actually in a safe, committed relationship now. This is not my mother who's going to leave me on the side of the road, right? So whenever I ask that question, am I interpreting you correctly? Am I reading this right? Not once have they ever said, yeah, the voice in your head is telling the truth. I'm so pissed off at you. I'm going to leave you. Like, not once. It's been so healing for my CPTSD patterns and for my relationships. And when I say healed, I don't mean I no longer get triggered or that that never happens or that I never feel shame about it or that I don't have a voice in my head. That's not what healed means. I mean healed because it's a big deal to even have this awareness and give it language in relationships in this middle of a scary moment. Like, that's a huge, huge thing. Whether it ever totally goes away or not, it doesn't matter. I'm already getting the outcome I desire, which is more emotional intimacy, understanding, and compassion in my relationships. So I don't need to totally heal the trigger in order to have what I want. I'm already getting what I want because of awareness and my ability to change because I'm choosing to do it differently. Do you see? This is how powerful awareness can be. And in awareness, not only can we calmly notice, but we can then notice our typical patterns, our dysfunctional coping behaviors in action, and we can make the choice to change. This is where our power comes from. This catalyzes our brains rewiring themselves. It's how we come out of inauthentic living and embody our authenticity, which is a higher frequency than love. You notice, you get curious, you make a choice. Lather, rinse, repeat. We're going to go into more detail in this later, but you notice, you get curious, you make a choice. I notice this hypervigilance feeling in my body. I'm curious about the story the voice in my head says. I'm choosing not to pick a fight with my partner. I'm choosing instead to ask. Repeat, repeat, repeat. So many people think, I just need the right nervous system tools. I just need the right coach. I just need the right program. I just need the right supplements. I just need the right diet. False. You don't. All of those things can be supportive. They can be helpful, certainly. There's a place for nourishing our bodies and supporting ourselves with supplements if we need it. There's a place for learning from others. There's a place for receiving therapy or coaching. Absolutely. I'm not invalidating any of those things. But the single greatest thing that has helped me heal more than any nervous system work or brain healing or device or meditation or class or anything is having awareness of the voice in my head and being able to notice what it says. And when I am not aware of the voice in my head, I continue these unconscious choices because I subconsciously already believe what the voice says. You believe what it says until you are aware of it and you go, oh, actually, now that I'm aware of that, I don't believe that. I don't believe that's real. Until you have that moment, you believe it. In awareness, I can consciously choose not to believe the voice or take action based upon what it fears or what the story is that it's saying. I do not believe that we can regulate our nervous system so much that these scared, wounded parts of us stop taking up space in our minds and bodies, nor do I think we need to get rid of the voice in our head to be healed. We don't need to fix any of these parts or get rid of any of these voices. We cannot regulate our way out of this. This is just part of being human. So what does awareness have to do with feel without fear? It is everything. It is literally everything. If you don't come to another workshop, be at this one because awareness is everything. Societal and cultural conditioning has pathologized sensations and feelings to the point that we think those are the problem. So we control them. We try to micromanage them. We medicate them. We want to get rid of them. We want to wish them away, pray them away, try to bargain them away, ignore them, hyperfixate on them, catastrophize about them. And we even kill ourselves over them. I attempted suicide because the sensations in my body and the voices in my head were so awful. I did not think I was ever going to get out of it. Like, awareness could be considered a life or death situation. Okay. So when we have all this conditioning about sensation, about symptoms, about whatever it is that we're feeling emotionally, it's no wonder we think our feelings are the problem. We've been conditioned to think that it's the water we're swimming in. And maybe now we're turning the light on and we're going, oh, right. I've been told I have to think this way or feel this way or try to get rid of this, but I actually don't. Phew, I can let that go, right? We have a very feeling phobic culture. Feelings are made to be problematic. They're labeled as good and bad, positive and negative, healthy, unhealthy, but feelings themselves are not the problem. They are just neutral. Feelings just are. The challenge, why you've been triggered by feelings or wanting to avoid feeling, is likely that you have not known how to meet your feelings with awareness. And if you don't know how to meet your feelings with awareness, then when they come in, you don't know what the fuck to do with them. So you're triggered and you're reacting all over the place and you're scrolling and you're smoking a ton of weed or drinking a bunch of alcohol or buying shit online that you don't need or whatever your coping mechanisms are, all because you have this belief that whatever I'm feeling right now, there's something wrong with it and I'm not supposed to feel it. And that's not true. Anger, for example. Who here has stories about anger? Okay, pretty much all of you. All right. Anger is not bad. It's not wrong. Maybe the voice in your head says that it is, but that doesn't make it true, right? When our anger is unconscious, when that energy is going through our bodies and we are not feeling and noticing and choosing what to do, then yeah, we're gonna yell or slam doors. We're gonna hurt ourselves or we're gonna hurt other people. Absolutely. But when we are conscious of that anger, it gives us the energy we need to set boundaries, assert ourselves, and lead. Like the same energy that you need to slam doors and yell and stomp off and be passive aggressive is the exact same energy that you need to assert yourself and set a boundary. It's literally just your choice and how you're going to channel that energy. That's it. Our judgment of our anger comes from unchallenged, unconscious conditioning. I want to go back to anger for a second. When I work with women, there's all kinds of stories about anger, but I primarily work with women. And when I work with women, I typically see two main stories about anger. Not the only two, but these are the main two that I see. The first one is that they grew up in a home where there was a lot of unintegrated, unhealthy anger. Lots of yelling, maybe abuse or violence, slamming doors, passive aggressiveness. That's the experience of anger that they had. And so they grew up with a belief, subconscious belief, if that's what anger looks like, I don't want any part of it. I don't want to be bad like that. The other story that I see with anger, especially with women, is that there was a time as a little girl or as a rebellious teenager where your anger made you stand your ground and you threw a fit and you said no to somebody violating your boundaries or to someone not honoring your autonomy. So you said no, you fought back, you resisted, you were in a fight response, you were angry, and you got punished, or you got rejected, or you got abandoned, or you got spanked, or you got sent to your room and isolated. And so the story that that creates for you around anger is, oh, I can't be angry because if I do, something bad is going to happen. Okay. So first story is, if that's what anger is, I don't want any part of it. Second story is, if I'm angry, I am bad and something bad is going to happen. Who has story one? Okay. Who has story two? Okay. It's about half and half. I think a little more for story two. All right. Great. Let's talk about anxiety. Right? We all have this belief that anxiety is bad. Oh my gosh, anxiety. Oh, it's wrong. I shouldn't be feeling anxious. Why am I anxious? So when that anxiety is unconscious, we catastrophize and worry and we try to control, right? We're trying to plan for the worst case scenario. We're super hypervigilant. When anxiety is conscious, when you are aware, oh, there's that feeling in my body. There's that voice in my head that's catastrophizing like crazy. That same energy that you use to worry and catastrophize and control can be channeled into meeting the part of yourself who's wounded and hurting and heal that wound, because the energy of anxiety is the same as the energy of perseverance. It gives you the energy you need to see something through to the end, right? Which is what anxiety is wanting. I just want it to be over. Right? It's so bad. I just want it to end. But if you can channel that energy, it gives you the perseverance to get through something. Our judgment of anxiety comes from our experiences, the horror stories. We've witnessed other unconscious people handling their anxiety. Maybe we were raised by anxious parents and their conditioning and their patterns got put on us in a really unhealthy way. We have a fear of anxiety. And then there's like the pharmaceutical and the medical industries who pathologize anxiety and try to medicate it away. So there's lots of judgment around anxiety. Grief, also not bad or wrong, hard, but not bad or wrong. And when we're unconscious of our grief or when we're not processing or being present with our grief, we'll either drown in it or we're going to get immobilized and stuck because that energy has nowhere to go. But when our grief is conscious, when we can just be present with, oh, that heavy, hurting heart feeling, the tears that want to come, the days that we want to crawl in bed and just collapse, when we are conscious with that, it can be channeled into honoring and feeling our pain and all the love that we still had to give, but not, might not be able to, or all the love we wanted to receive, but might not have received. We can let our tears cleanse us physically, energetically, emotionally. But our judgment of grief comes from this conditioning of society that's like, oh, we don't have time for that. That takes too long. I can't pause my life for that. I would just be grieving forever. Or we watch people go through grief in unhealthy ways. And we're like, well, shit, if grief means I'm going to become an alcoholic, like I can't let myself feel grief, you know, lots of judgment. Fear finally is not bad or wrong. When our fear is unconscious, it becomes a box that we get put into that we can't get out of. It's very limiting and we can get stuck. But when conscious, we can use that same energy and channel it into discernment and use our wise judgment to make the right choice for us. And just understand that fear is just a messenger. It's just letting us know that something feels unsafe. Our judgment of fear comes from not meeting it with awareness and recognizing that facing it is actually easier than avoiding it. In awareness, you're facing it. See, you don't have to do anything except be present with it. So whatever you're feeling, whatever sensations or symptoms you have, they are not bad and they are not wrong. They're not supposed to be there. As much as the voice in your head might object to that. And trust me, my voice objects to that all the time. Whatever you're feeling, whatever symptoms or sensations you're having, they are not your punishment. They're not your body's way of getting back at you. And they're not karma being a bitch. So quit trying to stop feeling. Quit trying to think your way out of feeling. Quit trying to mantra your way out of feeling. Quit trying to regulate your nervous system out of feeling. Quit trying to be toxic positivity out of a feeling. The more you're able to feel your feelings, the less nervous system regulation you need. I don't know if anyone's ever told you that, but the more you feel your feelings, the less nervous system tools you need. Feelings are not bad or wrong. They're just messengers. Sensation is literally the language that our bodies use to speak to us. That is the voice of our bodies, is how we feel. In trying to avoid or get rid of a feeling, we're in resistance, and that's what creates suffering. When we resist, we're not in congruence with the authentic self, because the authentic self does not resist, because the authentic self is not attached to anything. And the feeling of incongruence creates this dissonance in the body. You know what I'm talking about whenever I say you have dissonance in your body? It's like a one pole on this side and one on the other, and they're just pulling against each other. It's very uncomfortable. That's incongruence. You're not suffering when you're feeling your sensations or your emotions or your symptoms. It may be uncomfortable, but discomfort is not the same thing as suffering. And your feelings and sensations cannot harm you. They're just your body's messages to you. You suffer when you judge yourself for what you're feeling, or when you judge the feelings themselves. And you suffer when you try to get rid of sensation, because when you try to get rid of something, that means I have judged this to be bad or wrong or unnecessary, or this is not what's supposed to be happening, or whatever, equals judgment. When you're just feeling, you're present. That's it. You're watching, you're noticing, you're observing, you're curious. You're choosing consciously what you want to do. You can also have the awareness and the same level of presence with the voice in your head, your thoughts, because you are not your thoughts. You can't be your thoughts if you can observe them. Spiritual teachers have been teaching that for thousands of years. That's not anything new. You are simply being. You are a human being. When you wake up, you are aware and you are present. Your body is going to experience feelings and sensations, and some of those things are symptoms. Just notice curiously. Your mind is going to think and think and think. That's what it does. Russ Kennedy says the mind is a meaning-making machine. Like, that's what it does. You've heard of monkey mind if you've ever done meditation. The mind is just like ping pong. It's just all over the place, right? But you are not your mind. You can notice all of those ping-ponging thoughts going around. If you're not in awareness of them, they're still there. But what are they doing? They're fueling the dysregulation and they're fueling the patterns. All right, let's take a break. We're about an hour and a half in. It's a perfect time to pause, get a drink, use the bathroom, stretch if you need to shift to a different place in your house, or get out of your car or whatever it is that you're doing. Let's just take, let's say, 5 minutes. So we'll meet back at 5:30.